Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to those who know that there's something dreadfully wrong with the political, religious, military, academic, economic institutions that control our world. We realize that they are the problem. They will never be the solution. Therefore, our mission is to look behind the headlines to know who is perpetrating the tragedies that are besieging our planet and why they are doing so. Because based upon this plague of adverse influences, we have at most 15 years before the collapse of the world as we know it. As a result, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides the only reliable escape. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. It's astonishing that the Christian radio news, Salem Radio News, would begin their news with the line, "Even the weather turned out to greet those who came to honor the great man of history," as if Nelson Mandela were up there in heaven and somehow orchestrating the weather patterns. It's astonishing the kinds of myths that people will buy into and the attitudes that we embrace. With our discussion of the conditions in the Ukraine still relevant, I would like to continue with a couple of more articles. First, conclude with one that we were in the midst of, and then discuss a couple of more articles regarding the situation in the Ukraine, because it is invocative of what we're going to experience, and it is also enlightening in terms of why these travesties have besieged these people. There is this tendency to draw mythical conclusions that are patriotic, that are reassuring, that have no basis in fact. And for the Ukrainians, as you look at pictures of them and their protests, they are in large part gathering around shrines. Most of their shrines show religious iconed images of the Madonna and Child with full sun god halo regalia, a completely and totally Babylonian concept, with the women in little headscarves and the men in religious Christian robes. And it is this approach that they are taking to their mix of politics and religion as they protest against their government. They, the Christians of the Ukraine, are responsible for one of the world's most hideous, repulsive, vicious attacks on God's chosen people. And not one of, they conducted these attacks thousands of times over the course of 100 years. That stain is forever on their race, on their religion, on their nationalism. It's just as in America, the stain of the savagery perpetrated against the indigenous peoples and America's propensity for war will ever stain the stole of this country. There is no walking away from what we as a nation have done. Much of it was done in the name of politics and religion, just as it was in the Ukraine. There is a legacy, a consequence of these things. When we celebrate nationalism, as often occurs, and virtue in association with a nation, very typical here in America, now being manifest in Ukraine, without a proper perspective on who we really are and from where we have come, then we are subject to the misleading and undependable myths that Yahweh is trying to encourage us to separate from. Now, the reason I talk about Ukraine as being a model, as was Cyprus, for what's going to befall every nation, is that the nation itself, because of the position that it has put itself in, is bankrupt. And they are now concerned that their savings is going to be confiscated as it was in Cyprus. And it is what's going to happen really around the world. So this article from CNN reads, with many worried that the unrest could endanger their savings. In other words, they're absolutely cognizant of what happened in Cyprus. And the reason they are so aware of what happened in Cyprus is that a very significant percentage of the savings from non-Cypriots in Cyprus banks was from Russians. The central bank, therefore, had sought to head off panic withdrawals. So people are withdrawing their money because they recognize that what was done in Cyprus with the confiscation of savings was a trial balloon that central bankers got away with that will occur again. In a video statement, its chairman said the bank would not introduce any financial restrictions. Quote, I urge everyone to have confidence in the banking system and maintain their savings, said the chairman of the central bank. Now, when you're dealing with central bankers, when you're dealing with politicians, what do you think the likelihood is that they would tell the truth if they were planning to confiscate people's savings, that they would tell them in advance? Yeah, your fears are genuine. That's what we've done in the past. It's what we're going to do in the future. I would encourage you to withdraw your funds so that we can't confiscate them. Even some supporters were shocked by the abruptness with which the government has announced that it was suspending work on a long-awaited pact with the European Union in favor of reviving economic ties with Russia. The fact is that the Ukraine is owned by Russia. That's just the reality of it. They are energy dependent upon Russia, something that Russia has fought hard to maintain. And as a result, they're owned. Their debt is controlled by the Russians. They have dug this bed for themselves because of their debt, just as have so many European nations, just as has the United States. Scenes over the weekend show police beating demonstrators and that hardened opinions against Yanukovych, whom protesters say will do whatever Putin tells him to do. No. When you go into debt, you are controlled. You no longer own your country. You are no longer in control of your country. You've given the deed to the banks. It's what's happened in America. It is what has happened in the Ukraine. He's been losing his legitimacy for a long time. No, you know, it's the people of the Ukraine that for a very long time lost their legitimacy. They were savages, and now they're dependents, debtors, deadbeats. His decision to send police to beat up children was the last straw, said a protester. So was it the last straw when Ukrainians, by the tens of thousands, beat the heads of little children, Jewish children, against the walls and doors, floors, the presence of their parents? Was that not the last straw? This protester, very similar to what's going to happen throughout Europe and the United States, said that he voted for Yanukovych in the past and had joined the president's party of the regions. So here is somebody saying, oh boy, that person, he's just terrible, but they voted for them. That's what's going to happen in America. Most Americans, when we have economic collapse, are going to vote for the strong man. They're going to do what Germans did in the late 1920s. They're going to elect their own dictator. It's what happens in Islamic countries today. People are motivated by this blend of religion and patriotism, and they vote for those who will control them, fleece them, abuse them, control their lives. We will have no one to blame but ourselves. The Ukrainians are in that position today. I feel no sympathy for them. This picture was published yesterday. It shows people praying at a MH6 chapel during the EU protest at the Independence Square in Kiev. And it says anti-government protesters toppled a statue of Soviet state founder Vladimir Lenin in Ukraine's capital and attacked it with hammers as a symbolic challenge to President Yanukovych and his plans for closer ties with Russia. Russia is a fascist nation now. It's not a communist nation now. Russia itself has distanced itself completely from Lenin. But the reality here is that those who are conducting this protest, as you fan through the pictures, the amount of religiosity and disgusting pagan imagery that is so replete in Christianity, that is visible in these protests, makes you just want to scream. Here are people praying, and they're praying to the pagan god of Babylon. And they wonder why the real God has no interest in them. Now, the real God views them as an abomination, as revolting, as disgusting, as he does religious patriots around the world. But in this case, they have the stigma of having brutalized Yahweh's chosen people. And a statement from the ruling political party in the Ukraine, it says, this is a decisive moment when all Ukrainians have gathered here because they, the political party actually said that it's barbarism and brutality that cannot be tolerated, referring to the beating of the metal statue. But the protesters have said, this is a decisive moment when all Ukrainians have gathered because they don't live in a country where corruption rules and where there is no justice. But did you not create that country for yourselves over the last 100 years and your barbarism towards Jews? Welcome back to Shatteringness. I'd like to share a little more insight into the Ukraine because the manipulation of this country and its positioning itself so that it deserves to be manipulated is really the stuff and substance of man's political and religious manipulations, really, on a grand scale. And it's invocative of what's going to happen to many nations around the world. So this particular article was written by someone with an editorial agenda for CNN. The agenda is that this is a right-wing Christian hawk who wants America to see the boogeyman out there, not inside, and that America is the fighter and should get involved as the world's police to assure democracy is the approach here. But nonetheless, there's some interesting thoughts that are conveyed, and we are going to be vastly better prepared to deal with the world as it is approaching, as it is materializing around us, if we're aware of these kinds of things. This begins, democracy did not take root in Russia after 1991. 1991 is when the Soviet control, the communist control over Russia and many of its states dissolved. Yeltsin was the spokesperson for freedom. The fact is that two things are here are important. One is democracy is not a good thing. It has been made part of the vernacular of the Western world to speak of democracy as the ultimate good. But democracy is nothing but mob rule. It is the tyranny of the majority over the minority. And the problem with democracy is that ultimately the majority of people become dependent upon government and see fit to rob the minority to satiate their own covetousness. And it's what you're seeing in America. It has no chance, a democracy has no chance of long-term survival. There's only been two genuine democracies in world history. To actually be a democracy, the electorate themselves votes on all manner of issues. When to go to war, what to spend in terms of budgets, what roads to build. I mean, every decision is made by the people themselves, not by a legislative body. America was founded as a republic because the founding fathers of America recognized that democracy was a bad idea. Now, with the educational system of America being so deplorable, and really true around the world, and so many people being affected by religious and political myths, the people aren't qualified to make these kinds of decisions. But nonetheless, people are promoting democracy. The two long-lived democracy in world history, first was Sparta, which was probably the single most savage nation in world's history. They enslaved the neighboring nations so that they had a workforce, because the only work that was produced by the Spartans themselves was war. They, from a very early age, abused boys so they would be very good fighters, and girls were only the manufacturing plant for boys so that the boys could be fighters. It was a savage nation, but nonetheless it was a democracy. It lasted about 300 years. And then there was the Delian League. The Delian League was conceived by Greece as a strategy of war. They wanted to keep the Persians at bay. And so they felt that if they could impose democracy, their view of governance on the islands and the coastland of Turkey, the islands in the Aegean Sea and the coastland of Turkey, that there would be a buffer ally that would be a tripcord should the Persians decide to attack Greece. Well, when you compelled democracy, as America has attempted to do in Afghanistan and in Iraq, you end up with an absolute unmitigated disaster. That's like saying, I'm going to force you to choose. Of your own free will, but under the shade of my gun. It did not work in Greece. The Delian League collapsed, and of course the legacy of democracy in Sparta was absolute control and total savagery. Hi, Larry. Sure, you also have a view on this history.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Spartans did enslave the Messians, I believe, and that's how they kept themselves wealthy. They just had a slave class so they could run around and fight all day.
Yeah, the Time Machine, the movie called the Time Machine, is actually based on the Spartan culture, where an entire community of people were treated as slaves so that the citizens of the country could wage war. Come back to Shattering Myths. We're talking, this is an editorial that was written about the conditions in the Ukraine and why Americans should intervene. It begins by saying democracy did not take root in Russia after 1991. The moment you read that kind of thing and you see the term democracy, you realize that you're dealing with an individual who is not aware of what the word actually means. Now, he goes on to say, how and why it failed is a long story with many villains, but let's cut to the result. A former top officer in the KGB maneuvered his way into the Russian presidency in 1999 to 2000. And then he goes on to say that Vladimir Putin restored to power the old secret police apparatus. Well, any time you blame a situation on a lone individual, then you're missing the real cause of the problem. You know, today there's people are very willing to attack Barack Hussein Obama, and he's a bad man. But he's not much worse than was George W. Bush. who wasn't much worse than Bill Clinton, who wasn't much worse than King George I, who wasn't much worse than Ronald Reagan. It's just the fact is that the system and the people themselves are corrupt.
Well, they all work for the same guys.
I mean, yeah, you know, but Vladimir Putin isn't what he's an evil man. He is not alone responsible for the situation in Russia. You know, what happened in Russia is that the old secret police apparatus it did not get restored to power, but those who had power and influence in Russia became oligarchs, and they did so because the state needed to privatize so many institutions that were publicly owned, and the individuals that had accumulated some wealth. And you know, and when you think of a communist country, the way they present themselves is the opposite of a capitalist nation, where they say that that in a communist nation nobody has any wealth, that all wealth is owned collectively. But what happens, and I was in China before, it was the first group of people to come through China before it was made accessible to everyone. And what you find is that those who are appointed to power in the communist regimes over communities, over cities, over regions, skim enormous amounts of money from the system, and they become fabulously rich. And so it is the communist leaders who had stolen money, who then used their stolen money to become oligarchs, and they became amongst the wealthiest individuals in the world. And all Putin did is say, you know, if you're going to be an oligarch, and have made this money through prior thievery, I'll let you get along and away with it so long as you don't oppose me, so long as you're not political with that money. You know, buy your G5 and fly out of the country and buy your 200-foot yacht and have a nice life. Just don't get in my way. That's basically what happened. And that transition is a transition from communism to fascism. The people themselves, their lives don't change. They don't improve. Nothing new for them. It's just a slightly different way of accumulating wealth in a very concentrated number of people's hands, and of them being able to influence everybody and control everybody below them. They just moved from communism to fascism seamlessly, showing that those two beasts are really the same foe.
Well, they are. They both require the liberal use of government, don't they?
Yes, that's the. It's
the liberal. It used to mean, you know, liberty. Now right. It means I advance a large intrusive government in your life. I'm right. The opposite of liberty. So
you know, we think
everything stood on its head. You know?
Right. We think of labor unions as being liberal, but yet they're an essential element to a fascist society. You look at Nazi Germany, we think of Nazi Germany as a fascist state, but yet the party was called the Socialist Workers' Party. It was based upon trade union ideals. And it's all because people have to be controlled, and one of the easiest ways to control the workforce is to unionize them.
Well, that, and I have to tell you, I found it very odd. This is on the same subject, a little different twist.
Mm-hmm.
All the time I spent in Italy, you know, you'd see on the walls, you'd see this black writing and red writing. And the black writing, of course, was the people that were pro-fascist, and the red writing were the people that were pro-communist. And I got to tell you, you know, if you asked me to choose between Hitler and Stalin, I mean, I really don't have a pick.
Right.
You know, I'm amazed at the stupidity of
people. Our FDR, who was a fascist and therefore got along beautifully with both men, really. I mean,
fascist and a war criminal. Sure.
You're right. So it's... it is this myth. One of the myths that is so destructive is this idea that there are political entities that are trying to move a nation to either one of the extremes, communism or fascism on the far left and far right, when in fact they are the same beast. There really is no difference between ownership and control. If you have complete control, it is better than ownership. If you have ownership but have no control, it's meaningless to you.
Right, right. And control makes who owns what pretty much a moot point, doesn't it?
Yeah. And so you're back into a situation where if you don't understand that, if you don't understand the economics, then one of the central ingredients that's going to shape our world for the worse is out of your grasp. It's outside of your perspective. And understanding what's going to happen over the next 15 years, it's really essential. If you want to have any grasp on how the world is going to be manipulated over the next 15 years so that it is a one-world government and people lose all of their freedoms and their wealth, then you have to understand economics. And this realization is...
You know, it's amazing to me. You know, the major networks allow debate within a certain framework.
Right.
You know, lively debate within a certain framework. You just can't step outside that framework.
Right.
You know,
the framework is really tiny. It's between, in America, it's between Democratic and Republican ideals, but both would have us spend hundreds of billions of dollars on the military. Both would have us spend hundreds of billions of dollars on Medicare. Both would have us spend hundreds of billions of dollars on Social Security. Both would have.
Well, I was talking about this the other day, actually. It's they've gotten debates down to a point where it's stylistics. That's all it is. Who's got the better haircut? Who's got the better comeback?
We celebrated the 50th anniversary of Kennedy's assassination. He prevailed over Nixon, principally based on style. He looked young, handsome. He was slightly more articulate, so it was style over substance. And people who, if you are not aware of the facts, if you're not thoughtful, if you don't understand these things, style will always prevail over substance. And so almost all debates now are style over substance. They're no longer rational exchanges of fact. They're simply who can make the slickest presentation.
I saw an economist the other day. He was of course on the left, and he was going on about how today people are taxed less than they were 20 years ago. And of course, the biggest tax Americans pay today is probably in inflation.
Right.
And if you don't look at that as a tax, you've missed the whole boat.
Right.
People
and it's
are
not just inflation.
The average person can't get through a week without.
Yeah, there's a really clever means to inflation now that is different than the old mindset where we saw goods and services increase in terms of their monetization and monetarized value. Now the stealing of people's assets is through the devaluation of the currency.
And because the
economy is so depressed, you're not seeing the resulting inflation. You're just seeing that the currency is devalued. So now you've got the things that you have saved and that you own are not keeping pace with the destructive nature of the bankers inflating the currency, which is to devalue it. So it's a sinister move, and ultimately, of course, they're going to make the big swing, and the big swing will be that they will confiscate savings accounts, and they'll get by with it because the average American, for example, has less than $500 in savings. So compensating savings accounts when the average American owns a quarter of $1 million is going to be meaningless, because the thing that they'll do is that they will have inflated the money supply to the point where the currency will be meaningless, and therefore they'll forgive debt to say, you go along with our new program and our new currency and our new political system, you sign up, we'll forgive your debts. and we'll just confiscate the savings of everybody that has savings, which would be the minority of people. It'll fly beautifully in a democracy. And the voices
Sure. Yeah. Well, and you know, the bottom line is that we're watching this, you know, these things occur. We're watching really prophecy occur before our very eyes. And yet there are people today that think that they're going to, get up their ire and their patriotic fervor, right, and they're going to go out and they're going to change this. Well, nothing's changed.
Yeah. But here's the little bit of this editorial on the Ukraine. It says, no nation suffered more from the Soviet communism than the Ukrainians. And if you think of what was going on in the Ukraine at the time that they suffered under the communists, where they were perpetrating thousands of these pogroms against Jews, no nation deserved it more than the Ukrainians. The Ukrainian farmers lost their lands and their homes to Soviet collectivization in the 1920s. Millions died in the man-made famine that followed in the 1930s. Their language and culture was stunted under Moscow's rule. Their intellectuals and writers were surpassed, banished, murdered, and defamed. In 1991, Ukrainians seized their chance to build a country of their own. Again, the hope being political. The hope being societal, as opposed to the hope being in something that is reliable. They suffered, but there was no people more deserving of their suffering than these. We'll return to Shattering Mists after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Mists. On a slight departure, but a similar note, Barack Obama decided that he would fly off to Republic of South Africa to eulogize the, as he called him, the last great liberator, speaking of Mandela. It is interesting that if you were to grant Mandela political status for having opposed something, what it would be that he opposed is a police state. A state with a spy network that was intrusive into the lives of the people of the state. Police who could then were numerous and were armed to the teeth and could act upon the intelligence gathered by the intrusive spy network. And then a judicial system that was rigged along with a very large prison population. You know, that sounds a lot like another country that I know, one that I live in, that with a combination of the NSA, internal spying network, the alphabet soup of national and local police, a judicial system that has now been jury-rigged, and the world's largest prison population. Sure sounds like Obama's being a hypocrite here, eulogizing the great liberator when he is the architect of the very thing that Mandela fought against.
Say it ain't so.
Wow. Very, very troubling and concerning. But that's the nature of politics and religion, is to make the lie seem true and make the truth seem like a lie. It's the nature of Christianity, for example. The truth is the Torah, and yet they will make the Torah seem unworthy. The lie is the Christian New Testament, and yet they will make it seem as if it is inspired by God.
Well, yeah, and it's pretty clever. The counterfeits are clever. It's you know, first of all, the rabbis could never find the mercy in the Torah. They couldn't see Yahusha.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't see Yahweh coming down here and handling, taking the beating for the family. So they said that the Torah was nothing but a bunch of laws. And then the mercy in the Torah was lost. And right. Yahu Kanan means what? What does Yahu Kanan mean?
Yahweh is merciful.
Yeah, and they couldn't see that mercy. They, in fact, they had to change his name to John so you'd never see that.
Right.
But then the Christians come along and they take the goddesses of the gratia, which is grace, and they replace Yahweh's, the creator of the universe's mercy, with grace. And And it's almost buyable.
Yeah. Well, look, another one of the disciples, a fellow named Matanyah. What does Matanyah mean?
Well, it means Yahweh's gift.
Right. And so they changed it to Matthew, so no one would know that it was Yahweh who was providing this gift of life and of mercy. Then you've got a fellow named Shimon. Shimon means he listens.
Yeah, he listens.
Listens to whom? God? Something that Christians don't do.
And then you've got a guy named Sheol who means to question.
Yeah,
and
question him.
You might want to think about questioning him.
Right. And then you've got this this fellow named Yahusha, which tells you everything you need to know. Yahweh is saving us.
Statement right there.
Yeah. Right. It's Yahweh saving us. And so they changed his name to Jesus. And with all of the changes, if you talk to a Christian and you tell them there is no Jesus, there's no one named Jesus in the first century. The letter J wasn't even invented until the 17th century. And realistically, there isn't a single letter in Jesus that is consistent with his actual name. Every bit of it's a myth. And you tell them that, and they have no capacity to even process this. But it's the same with all of these political and religious myths. They're all the same thing. They take a lie, and they repeat it so often that people begin to believe it. Like Americans thinking that America is this Christian country, this moral bastion of freedom. And yet, look at our history. We're a militaristic nation. We have conducted 101 wars.
We've been at war ever since I've been
since
alive.
Since the first Europeans landed on this continent. 101 wars. We savage the native peoples.
Well, and the point of it is that these oligarchs own these companies, and weapons have to be built. It enriches them, and then they use your son and my son, or somebody else's son, and
go fight the wars.
And call them heroes for dying.
Right. Of course, because you've got to encourage more people to sacrifice their lives and their wealth, and you want everyone to honor these heroes, all of whom are being orchestrated to make bad situations worse, depriving people of their freedom and free will. We'll be back in a moment.